Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
They will try a field goal on 4th and 7. Let's see. That's going to be a 46-yard try for Durbin. Liam McCullough to snap it. Johnston puts it down at the 36, and the kick is blocked. And Penn State's going to scoop it up, and they've got a returner bringing it down the left side of the field. It's Haley, the quarterback, left side to the 10-yard line, to the 5, and into the end zone goes Grant Haley for a Penn State touchdown off a blocked field goal try.
Well, awful loss. We got to regroup. We're going to get back late in the morning again and just got to regroup against a good Northwestern team and go play in our home stadium and rally up and get better. Major issues. We held them to a field goal after a blocked punt, which is inexplainable. And then the long field goal, I thought about it, and that would have put us up by 7, but it didn't work out. So probably should not have kicked the ball then. That was, a 47-yard field goal. He can kick that easily in practice, but they were jumping over us earlier in the game, and I thought we had that fixed.
Well, I still think we can play. Obviously, Cincinnati played well.
I don't like losing, just like anybody else. I can get disappointed and upset. I mean, I can get disappointed. I don't like where we are. I don't like where we are as a football team. This is my responsibility. So at the end of the day, in my mind, I'm trying to find a way to fix it. As fast as I can, the best I can. So that's what I have to do. I take responsibility for it all. It's not our players. We got to fix some things and keep working at some things. And we will. This is unfortunate, but I know our guys are trying hard. I mean, it's not from a lack of effort. It's not from a lack of trying. The luck's not swinging our way. We're not getting those breaks right now. I'm trying to find a way to win. I'm trying to find a way to move the ball and score touchdowns. That's our job on offense. So I told you guys before, we'll do whatever we have to do. I'm not opposed to doing anything if it means we got a chance. It's a tough sport, and he's trying to make plays and battling as hard as he can. And these hits, these quarterbacks only have so many of these hits in their body. Pretty soon, guys don't get up all the time, and that's what's happening. It's unfortunate. It's just been happening way too much.
Matthews got it. Back to pass. Looking left. Throwing. It is caught. He's got the 5. Diving into the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. And Quan Bolden fires that ball into the stands. And the Lions have the lead back with 16 seconds left. How about that quarterback? He's something else. Here we go. Lions up by 3. 3 seconds to go. Should be the final play of the game. Cousins back, throws over the middle, lateral back to Vernon Davis. Davis looking for somewhere to go, and he's taken down. Put it away, baby. This game is over.
Washington is good. I mean, you don't just win 4 games straight in this league and not be a really good football team. So we anticipated it was going to be a tough, tight game. We take them as they come. We got another one to get focused in on. We don't get too high, don't get too low, but proud of the way the guys play. They fight, they practice hard and prepare well. That's why they play well in these tough situations.
I wasn't perfect today, no question. Missed some throws, stuff I'd like to have back. We were able to pull it out at the end, which was good. I expect to win every time I get the ball. It's not always going to happen that way. I expect to go out there and win. I believe in the guys that I got in the huddle with me. I think they believe in me, and this is NFL football. This happens. Just glad we made the plays.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Monday afternoon quarterback edition of the Extravaganza. Oh, we got a lot of good work to do today. Thanks for being a part of the program. It is a Monday afternoon quarterback edition, and that means we are going to focus a lot on football, but we are also one day away from the start of the fall classic that is going to be a frozen classic in Chicago and in Cleveland, two cold Midwestern cities in the middle of in late October, pushing into early November. Yeah, it is going to be very, very cold. But we are going to talk a little baseball as the Cleveland Indians, Chicago Cubs, somebody loses or ends their drought. Somebody ends their drought after 68 years of futility for one club, 108 years of futility for the other. It is just, I mentioned being frigid and frozen. It is one of those things where you have to ask yourself, is hell about to freeze over? So we are going to talk a little baseball today as well. Thanks for joining us. this afternoon for the extravaganza. We do have a lot of things to get into. Dennis Mandeloff will join us from Cleveland to talk about Game 1 of the World Series tomorrow. Also about the 0-7 Cleveland Browns. I stand by what I said a couple of days ago. The Cavaliers won the championship out in Cleveland. The Cleveland Indians are about to win the championship out there in Cleveland. And the Cleveland Browns are about to go 0-16. Just for counterbalance, if for nothing else, that is what the football or the sports gods are going to make happen. Coming up at 4:05, Chris Lemieux will talk about north of the state line football. How about those gritty, gutty, and that's usually my term for the Indians, the gritty, gutty grinders. But how about the gritty and gutty Detroit Lions? Three straight wins. They beat a red-hot four-game winning streak, a Washington Redskins team yesterday. Matthew Stafford starting to get some national conversation about things we've discussed here in the Northwest Ohio locality in the last couple of weeks, getting national recognition now as maybe pushing himself up above the tier two quarterbacks to maybe being discussed among one of the elite NFL quarterbacks. The Alliance rolling now at 4-3, a three-game winning streak, and they've got Houston coming up next week. So we're going to talk to Chris Lemieux of PrideOfDetroit.com about that. That'll be at about 4:05. Then at 4:35, we'll talk about the thing you heard first in the montage, and that is, how about your Ohio State Buckeyes going into the whiteout in Happy Valley and actually getting wiped out? This is not something that normally happens. The Nittany Lions have tried two whiteout games against Ohio State in the last 5 years, and both of them ended up with Ohio State victories. They tried it a third time, and this time it was the charm. I'm not saying the white stands and, it was pretty cool, by the way. It's a really cool visual to have that going on at night in a primetime game. It did look really cool. I'm not saying that affected anything in any way whatsoever. The special team for Penn State, more importantly, maybe the special teams, the lack of great special teams play is the best way to say that for Ohio State. That had a lot more to do with that defeat than anything else. Buckeyes dropped from 2, not very far, to 6 after that loss to Penn State. Michigan, after another pounding of a Big Ten opponent, and again, the Wolverines have really not been tested by anybody. Well, Wisconsin gave them a great test. Let me rephrase. But that's in conference. They have not played anybody out of conference worth anything at all to really, let us know how strong their 7-0 record is. But what all they can do is pound the teams that are in front of them. And after a 78-0 pounding of Rutgers, it was a 41-8 beatdown of Illinois. And now it's on to revenge time. The dropped punt loss from a year ago still probably haunting at least that Michigan fan who had his hands on the side of his face as the most improbable Michigan State win over Michigan maybe ever happened the way that it did. Now it'll be revenge time for Jim Harbaugh and his Wolverines. They play Saturday at East Lansing at Michigan State. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. So a lot of stuff to get into. They are now number 2, Michigan. Alabama, everybody moved up a notch, basically down to 6 where Ohio State landed. So Michigan goes from 3-2, Clemson from 4-3, Washington from 5-4, Louisville up now at number 5, and then Ohio State checks in at number 6. Still not too terribly much to worry about if you are a Scarlet and Gray believer, because you went out, including beating Michigan on November 26th, and you go to the Big Ten Championship game in which you will likely pound the West Division champion, and then you will still go on to the playoffs. That is what is to be expected. All right, so that's kind of where we are on this Monday afternoon quarterback edition of the program. Having gotten into all of that at least a little bit, let's get into this. Do you think this is the time, once the nation focuses on Chicago and Cleveland, starting tomorrow night, with John Lester, the superb lefty, going to start for Chicago, Corey Kluber, the Cy Young Award winner from 2 years ago, who will be in the Cy Young hunt when the awards are given out after this postseason. Corey Kluber, he will not get it, by the way, for the Indians. Everybody's eyes, all eyes are going to be on the World Series because of the nature of the drought, as I've mentioned. Not that the World Series isn't always a big deal, because it is. Even though I must admit I didn't pay a ton of attention the last couple of years when Kansas City was in it, because I don't like Kansas City. Actually, I like the city very much. I like the people there very much, too. Good people. in the couple of trips that I've made to Kansas City. But I don't like the Royals. So I didn't really pay that close of attention to it. I don't think there's anybody in many locales, if in any locales, from one end of this country to the other, who that will not be paying close attention to this World Series. Because of the Cleveland Indians, to an extent, the lovable losers who had a movie made about them in 1989 about their lovable losses and their losing year after losing year, not getting anything done since 1948. And they're just, you know, just impossible, improbable and impossible ways to lose along the way. You know, the Indians are a story. First time in 68 years they could win the World Series. First time in 19 years back in the Fall Classic. That's a big story anyway, and I think a lot of people are into. But we all know that that's the sub-story. That's the subplot. That's second page. Front page, above the fold, in about 72-point font, bold-faced, is the Chicago Cubs. 1908, Bartman and Billy Goats, and so much more. First World Series appearance in 45 years, let alone victory in 108 years. The lovable losers from Wrigley. That is the story. And because of that, baseball is going to have maybe a command audience for this World Series, unlike any they've had in a long time, outside of New York versus New York. You know, when there's a subway series, and you've got Yankees and Mets in the largest city in this country, that's going to command a lot of eyes, even if it's only in the Northeast, even if it's only up there in the New York area. And, of course, it is. It goes beyond that. But you understand my point. Chicago is a big market, third largest media market in the United States. Cleveland is not, much smaller media market than even Detroit. But the stories make them bigger markets than even what they are. It makes the large market Chicago Cubs even much larger, and it makes the medium-sized Cleveland market much larger as well. There will be more eyes in other cities watching this because of those stories. And since that's the case, is this the time, do you think, for baseball to maybe discuss a little bit about what ails it? And what ails it, there isn't a ton, to be quite honest with you. There isn't a ton. But a couple of things that ail baseball. Now that everybody's going to be watching, and this might be the time for that conversation. Among them, that the 103-win Chicago Cubs are the visiting team. They have a home field disadvantage against the 94-win Cleveland Indians. Now, I'm an Indians fan. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm an Indians fan. I should just be thrilled and just shut up. Take the home field advantage and go on about my merry way and not complain, right? And I will do that. I won't complain per se, because this time it worked out in my favor. But I will tell you this. If this was, like, let's say 1995, when the Indians were the World Series, the American League pennant winner and in the World Series, and they had the 100 wins or 100-plus wins or whatever it is, and the National League team had 9 or 10 fewer wins, and we didn't get home field advantage for my team, I'd be livid right now. So I have to be fair. And I bring this up now and say, does Rob Manfred need to do something about this ridiculous Bud Selig rule? This is a Bud Selig idea, if you recall. And, of course, it had to get through all of the owners, and everybody had to agree to it, and they did. But I think this is something that if I'm in Chicago right now, I'm probably pressing really hard, and I'm railing against, and I'm saying, you know what? This needs to change. To me, home field, just like it does in the first round of the playoffs, just like it does in the League Championship Series, it ought to do in the World Series. It ought to belong to the team that had the best regular season. The best record wins. It's that simple. And at least it ought to be. And we go ahead and put this ridiculous importance on an exhibition game that the managers don't even know how to manage in the Midsummer Classic because of times like this. Terry Francona was even asked about this. The Indians manager was asked about this a couple of days ago. You know, this downtime between the ALCS and the World Series. They got all kinds of things to ask him about. And he does not like the idea of what gave him and his team the home field advantage right now. He said, and I quote, "I am not the biggest fan of it. I'm a big fan of Mr. Selig's, But I'm not really crazy about the idea of one game, meaning the All-Star game. He said, I don't think it's fair to the managers. I don't think it's fair to a lot of people. He said, I don't think you can have all of that. You start bringing microphones into the dugout during the game, and it has this exhibition feel to it, yet it carries a lot of weight. To every manager, he said, you want to get guys in games. The criteria is a little bit, it's just unfair, especially to the managers, because you're going to try to accomplish so many things and still win, and it's very difficult, end quote. I could not agree more. You're telling managers, hey, get everybody in. You're telling baseball, essentially, too, by the way, that even if a guy isn't worthy of being in the All-Star game, he's got to be in because of that one player for every team, or, you know, one representative from every team rule. And then once they're there, you want everybody to play, even if it's not the right move to win the game. And, oh, by the way, winning the game matters because of, here we are, tomorrow night. On October 25th, the outcome of the July All-Star game starts to carry its weight now, or at least show its weight, because the game will be in Cleveland as opposed to Chicago. I don't like it. I'm glad the Indians have home field, and I'll take it tomorrow, and I'll cheer for the Indians and all that stuff. But I don't like it, and I think it's something baseball really ought to try and address. Second thing that they might want to talk about now as they get ready to start the postseason, or not start the postseason, start the Fall Classic, the World Series tomorrow, and that is the fact that they're going to start it in very, very cold temperatures. Cleveland in late October can be very brisk. Chicago is going to be downright cold. You know, both of those cities, you know, they play baseball by lakes, and you get the cold, cold winds coming in off of the lake in the late part of the year. What is baseball? Baseball's a summer sport. Baseball's a warm weather sport. Baseball players have to survive and deal with cold weather conditions twice a year. In the very beginning of the season, in early April, when it's still very frigid in a lot of northern climates or midwestern climates. And then late in the season, in the postseason, if you are fortunate enough to get to October baseball, then it can get very, very cold. And guess who else pays the price then? And, of course, those are the fans. I'm not a big fan of frigid baseball. I want to see guys, when the game is played over 6 months, the vast majority of them summer months, which is, you know, the latter part of April, then all of May, all of June, all of July, all of August, all of September, that's the vast majority of it is summer baseball. That's how this game was invented. That's the way the sport was meant to be played. It's not meant to be. Who can handle the cold? Who can suffer through the pain of a stinging bat at a 96-mile-an-hour fastball when the temperature is 38 and there's snowflakes flying, potentially anyway? That's not how it's supposed to be. It's a little bit different than football, in my view. Football is a fall and winter sport. And if you happen to play in a place like Miami all season long, but then you don't get home field advantage and you got to play a playoff game in New England, in Foxborough, hey, suffer. Suck it up. Deal with it. Find a way. That's okay, you know, because football is meant to be played in those kinds of conditions. I don't feel like especially if you win those games and you have the opportunity to host. I don't feel like that's the case with baseball. I think this is, in other words, this is a long way of saying I think the season is too long, and I think maybe this is a time for baseball to start talking about either returning to the doubleheader as a way to get games in a little bit earlier in the season. Getting back to a steady diet of doubleheaders, even if they have to be day-nighters, so you clear the stadium after the first game and nobody has to lose a gate. We know that's what it's all about, the almighty dollar. The owners don't want to lose a gate by having doubleheaders, particularly the traditional kind. And obviously doubleheaders make your pitching rotation a little bit more of a challenge, but that's part of the game too. Train your pitchers that way. Managers have to understand how to deal with their bullpen that way. I can't use eight relievers in the first game, and then I can't have them for the second. Well, then you're going to have to manage it a little bit differently.
And don't forget,
that's how it used to be done.
And don't forget, Bob, nowadays there is that extra rule. If it's one of those makeup doubleheaders, you're allowed a 26th player for that day only.
Yeah, they give you that one extra guy, too. So, in other words, there are some solutions for the complaints that they might offer for shortening the season by doing that. And then the other thing is maybe, just maybe, you know, lop off a handful of games. Go from 162 to 154 the way they used to be. If the alternative is playing baseball into November and trying to play a summer sport in a football winter climate, then to me, I think that's something they really need to think about. I'm not really looking to see who can handle the elements better in baseball. I like that in football. I'm okay with, let me rephrase, I'm okay with that in football. But in baseball, I want to see everybody playing in peak conditions, at the peak of their abilities and their talents, not who can survive and brave the conditions the best. So that's just a little thought going into it. We're going to talk a little baseball with Maniloff coming up, as I mentioned, as well as some football out there Cleveland way. A little bit later on, we're going to get Detroit football at 4:05 with Chris Lemieux. Hiccups are a bad thing to have on the radio. We're going to get a little football line style with Chris Lemieux. Then college football coming up at about 4:35 with Chris Lauterbach of 11warriors.com. So all of that on the table. I'd like your thoughts on the All-Star game as I described it and as Tito Francona described it. He's a beneficiary of the American League winning the All-Star game and thus handing his club the home field advantage here to start the World Series. Games 1 and 2 and games 6 and 7 will be in Cleveland, and that's a great advantage to have. But yet he acknowledges it's a bad rule. It's a bad way to do this thing. We should not be putting that much stock into an exhibition game in the middle of the summer. So I want your thoughts on that, too. If you like to, dial us up at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, or tweet to us your thoughts at Sports Radio 1065 on Twitter, and Facebook comment to us, 1065 The Ticket. All right, we'd love to hear from you, and we'll talk to Maniloff coming up here in just a couple after the bottom of the hour Sports Center, which comes after I remind you to get yourself to the Buckeye Store and More. Hey, don't go putting your scarlet and gray away now just because the Buckeyes lost one in Happy Valley. You know you still want to represent because all is still well in Buckeye land. Buckeyes just have to win out, and you know what's going to happen. They're going to go to the Big Ten Championship game, win that, and go to the playoffs. So don't panic. If you are a Buckeye fan, represent at the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore. It's in Sylvania, 5700 Monroe in Starlight Plaza. They got hundreds of new Nike products in stock and hundreds more products coming every single day at the largest store in Ohio dedicated to Buckeye gear. You're going to love it. You're going to feel like you've gone to college football heaven, even if you love Michigan instead, or Notre Dame, Michigan State, Toledo, BG, or baseball's Detroit Tigers. Why? Because there are fan zones in the store for all of those franchises and programs as well. That's the Buckeye Store and More. It's in Sylvania. It's, like I said, it's right between Ralphie's and Dave's in Starlight Plaza in front of Prometica. Big inflatable Brutus is on the roof, standing proud and tall, and he'll wave you in to the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore. Your phone calls, Dennis Maniloff as well, coming up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We all know who the most valuable player of the American League Championship Series was, do we not? And it was very, very well deserved. Will he play such a prominent role in the World Series? Allow me, if I could, before we go out to Cleveland to say good afternoon to our friend Dennis Maniloff to talk about the World Series and also talk a little bit about the winless Cleveland Browns and the National Football League. Allow me to get you ready for World Series baseball tomorrow night in Cleveland.
You hit a grand slam, and now you're down by just a single run. But we believe land, and Miller stepping in to get it done. Don't blink your eyes, or he will shut you down, no hesitation. Your behind.
absolutely love World Series baseball, and if that doesn't get you jacked up, juiced up, whatever it is you want to call it, then you don't have a pulse. Dennis Mantiloff is out there in Cleveland. Game one tomorrow night at Progressive Field. What's going on, brother?
You clear that with the Michael Jackson estate to use that?
What does he have to do with it? This is Miller time. It has nothing to do with Thriller time. Come on, man. You going to mess with us? By the way, I like how you joined in there. I heard you since we had you potted up there. I heard you doing the ee-hees. That was outstanding, D-Man. I'm glad you're feeling the groove.
Doing the what?
So tell me, did you ever think you would come to this? Did you ever think you would come to a team that hasn't won a World Series in 68 years, taking on a team that hasn't won a World Series in 108 years, the two longest droughts, championship droughts in professional baseball? Dennis, what are the odds of this coming to fruition the way it were, the way it did?
Crazy. I wouldn't have seen it. I will say, though, Jenson Lewis, the guy you and I know, sure. Former Indian, he predicted in spring training or coming out of spring training that it would be Cubs-Indians World Series, so that was impressive for him. I don't know that many people who saw it. Look, the Cubs,
did he do it seriously or just one of those like, yeah, the Indians are going to the World Series? Because back in
March,
I don't know how many people thought.
He actually put the logos up, I believe, on his Facebook post or on his Twitter post of the teams that he thought were going to win each division and wild card and then eventually advance. So it was all out there for public consumption, and he said Indians-Cubs. So
that's impressive.
Hats off to Jenson Lewis. Look, I mean, I thought the Cubs were going to be really good. I thought they would make the playoffs. I picked the Giants because of the even year thing to win the World Series. To get to the World Series and face the Royals again. But, you know, I did think the Cubs were going to be really good. So I thought they were World Series capable.
Okay.
I did not see that with the Indians, obviously. 82-80 was my prediction, way off on that. The Indians have been an incredible surprise to me on so many levels. So I really didn't see one half of this equation.
Okay, and I didn't either. I think I was listening to Mike and Mike this morning, and I thought they were talking about over half or almost half, like 48% of their analysts who picked baseball at the beginning of the year actually picked the Cubs to go to the World Series. So this is not a huge surprise to them. But I kind of thought they would too, although I did pick the Nationals. I thought the Cubs would win their division. I thought the Nats would actually go to the World Series. That was my pick in spring training before the season started. But the Indians, I guess it's once bitten, twice shy. You know, every time we see a Sports Illustrated, doing that, and then they didn't collapse last year, but they didn't make it. They didn't get to the playoffs, all that sort of thing. I just kind of give up on predicting them to do much more than challenge for a playoff spot. So I did not see this. But having said all of that, nobody could have seen it, given the circumstances, the totality of the circumstances. If you picked them the way Jensen did, you picked Michael Brantley, probably hitting about 320, maybe, 25 home runs, 100 RBIs, a Silver Slugger Award, playing great defense. You probably penciled in 12 or 13 wins apiece from Carrasco and Salazar and being healthy and Yan Gomes being a Silver Slugger and, that kind of a catcher and, none of those things happen because of all of the injuries. So that's what makes this even that much more improbable, which is why my question to you about how this thing is going to play out is a valid one. How much improbability is left in this club? Do you think they can actually still get this done against the 103-win Chicago Cubs?
Oh, boy, Bob. You know what? I mean, people have heard me over this past year, like, okay, pessimistic Pete, he's going to be negative again, negative Ned, he's going to say they're not going to win. I just don't see it, Bob. I don't. I mean, I see on paper a mismatch, and, because of the health. I mean, really, it does become a health issue here because we've said it in the previous two series. If the Indians had a fully equipped rotation, I thought they would beat Boston. And if they had a fully equipped rotation, I thought they'd beat Toronto.
Yep.
Because they didn't. I picked Boston to win. I picked Toronto to win. Was wrong on both. Once again, though, I look at the Cubs and how complete they are and how relatively healthy they are compared to Cleveland, particularly at the top of the rotation. And I say, I don't see it. I don't see the Indians winning. It doesn't mean they can't. People who know me want me to pick against them again. They want to, nobody gives us a chance to find. It'd be great if the Indians could take it one more series and shock the world once again. but I just look at how loaded the Cubs are offensively, how incredibly good they are pitching-wise. I mean, I don't see how you score runs off them. Are they invincible? Are they unbeatable? No, of course not. Are they going to be very difficult to beat four times in a seven-game span? Yes.
Dennis Maniloff is our guest. We're talking about the World Series a little bit to start out here. Game number one tomorrow is going to be Corey Kluber against John Lester. The Indians have announced it will be Kluber, Bauer, and Tomlin in that order. However, they're still trying to figure out whether or not Danny Salazar. When is the World Series roster due, by the way, Dennis?
That's a great question, Bob. But let me just jump in right away.
Yeah.
I'll believe Bauer when I see it. You heard me on your air.
Yeah.
When you said, how long do you think Bauer's going to go? And I said, we'll see. All right. Well, guess what? He lasted 21, 22 pitches. I'll believe it when I see it that pinky holds up. Based on the blood that was gushing out of that thing in Toronto, I'm sure Francona and Callaway are going to have a backup plan immediately.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then let's get to that, because that's the reason I asked if you knew when the rosters were actually due, because the question is Danny Salazar going to be added to the World Series roster? And if so, Tito has said, as long as I believe his arm is 100%, then we'll take that next step forward in seeing about how we can use him, how he can help us. Originally, that thought was if he makes it back, for the playoffs at all, it would be in a limited one or two inning, maybe a relief kind of a role. But in the last few days, and maybe it's just talk, because you got to fill the airwaves with something and the column space and papers with something during 6 days down between securing the ALCS and starting the World Series. But now they said he might even start. So if he did, like, what would you expect to be the scenario there? Would that be in Bauer's place in case those stitches are not looking good? Or are we talking about a four-man rotation with, with Bauer, Tomlin, and Danny going 2-3-4?
Yeah, that's a good question, Bob, and I really don't know. I mean, because they know their personnel better than we do, and they know what Salazar, what he's capable of at this moment, how much stamina he has, how his arm's feeling. I mean, you can't just say, okay, all systems go, we expect 100 pitches out of him, when he hasn't done anything for weeks and weeks and weeks. Here's how I view the series where the Indians are concerned, mm-hmm. where their pitching staff is concerned. This is truly a pitching staff that is going to try to attack or subdue the Chicago Cubs. Meaning, beyond Kluber, I think this whole starting pitching thing is almost a misnomer, as bizarre as that sounds. Kluber's a guy you expect to go deep, okay? Beyond that, though, I just think that Francona's looking at these games as pieces, parts. Each game is made up of 2 to 3 inning chunks.
Right.
And I don't think he's looking. Of course he would love to see Bauer suddenly have a healed pinky and go deep into a game. Of course he would like to see that from Tomlin. But realistically, beyond Kluber, I think they look at each of these pitchers as a 2 to 3, perhaps 4 inning, in some cases, meaning the starting length guys, mm-hmm. that type of production or that type of length, as opposed to, a starting pitcher means we're automatically going to get 6 to 7 innings. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, with the exception of Kluber, as you pointed out.
Right. I mean, Tomlin. Okay, yeah, you'd like to see Tomlin go deep, but if he gets into trouble early, are you going to be hesitant to pull him? In other words, I think the one pitcher on the staff, the one starter, in quotes, who you don't go get if he's struggling early is Kluber. The rest of them have real short leashes, in my opinion, okay? And that could also involve Tomlin. Now, sure, you don't want to burn your bullpen, but I think we're at a point now where it's all hands on deck, and these guys are saying, guys like, Miller, of course, multiple innings. Allen, I'll do multiple innings if you need me. Otero, multiple innings. So that's how you shorten games, is you have your relievers willing to do multiple inning stints.
Dennis Mantloff is our guest, talking about the pieces and parts approach for the Indians and Terry Francona in the World Series, which begins tomorrow. Were you surprised? Last thing, I want to get you a couple of NFL questions from you, Dennis. Were you surprised at how easily that Cubs lineup, now that they found their stride and their groove, were able to touch up Clayton Kershaw in a deciding game the way that they did?
No,
or
I'm not.
Kershaw really just, you know, truly, you know, damaged goods when it comes to the postseason? He's never going to be able to shake that.
No, Kershaw's still a great pitcher. He will always be a great pitcher. He just has a few issues in the postseason, specifically, you know, later in the innings, later in the starts, although in this one, the one you're talking about, it was early. But no, I have no disrespect to Kershaw at all. It is necessary here. He just ran into a buzzsaw. I mean, he silenced the buzzsaw the first time. So, the Cubs are just that good. I mean, when they're going well, they are very difficult to deal with.
Yeah, it is very bizarre. I don't know how you can be as dominant, and we're talking about some of the most dominant regular seasons we have seen in 40, 50, maybe 60 years in Major League Baseball. And we're talking about Hall of Famers that have come and gone and not been as dominant as he has been in the regular season. But for him to just not be able to clutch up, if you will, and for whatever reason it is, and it's no disrespect to the Cubs, because Cubs are a great hitting lineup, obviously, but he has proven this time and time again over the last few years, that when he gets to the postseason, he is just a different guy, talking about Clayton Kershaw, and that's why they're on the outside looking in at the World Series tomorrow like the rest of the country will. Do you feel like, by the way, that the Indians are now a prohibitive underdog? And it's a weird role, because the Cubs were always everybody's underdog, the lovable losers. But the whole country, I think, outside of Northeast Ohio is probably pulling for them to end this 108-year jinx.
Yes, I think the Indians are prohibitive underdogs. Just look at Vegas to find that. And sure, I mean, Cleveland, the Indians love the us against the world. LeBron has said Cleveland against the world. So, the Indians have no problem being the underdog in this series or being quote-unquote disrespected. The Cubs, it would be hard to look at a Cub, you know, in the face and say, have the Cubs say to you, oh, we're underdogs. I mean, there's no way that they could possibly see that or think that realistically based on the health of the rosters. So, but I think both teams, once the game start, they're not going to matter. You know, you just have to – you have to hit them, and they have to hit you, and you have to field, and you have to run, and all the underdog stuff sounds great in the run-up to the games, but once the games start, it's just who executes better.
No question about it. And Dennis Mantloff is our guest again. He's out of Cleveland. He covers the Indians and the Browns and the Cavaliers and much, much more for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Northeast Ohio Media Group. Let's switch gears to the Browns for just a moment in the NFL. You know, I've said this before, and I think all of us would take this. As much as the city of Cleveland out there is a football town first, I think everybody knows the Browns are a religion there. Then probably the Indians, the Cavaliers, traditionally have been probably the third-place finisher among Cleveland teams for Cleveland sports fans out there. But I think everybody would take this. If you get a world championship in 2016 from the Cavs and a world championship in 2016 from the Indians, you'll live with 0-16 from the Cleveland Browns. You okay with that?
Yeah. You know, I would take that in a blink.
And I think they're headed to that, Dennis. I really, really do. I'm going to pick the Indians before it's all said and done to beat the Cubs. And I honestly, looking up and down this schedule for the Browns, I don't see the victory. I don't see any place where I say, oh, that's their win. Anywhere in the remaining nine games, Dennis. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I would take a Cavs title and Indians World Series, even if it doesn't result in a win. It's still an amazing season for them. You know, so you don't have an issue there. No, I don't, no matter the outcome. Regarding the Browns, yeah, 0-7 teams are in no position to say we're going to win here, we're going to win there. I don't mind the confidence that in the bravado that was shown several weeks ago by Pryor when he said, you know, we can win all our games, all that. I still don't mind it coming from the locker room, but realistically, where are you going to win a game? I guess the Jets maybe is a chance, a decent chance. Maybe the Ravens on the road, even though it's a road game. Maybe the Giants. But it's going to be very difficult to win. But in this case, though, Bob, I hate to say this. I've come over to the dark side. I've come over to the draft side now, finally, after all these years of being, you know, look, I don't see any difference between 0-16 and 2-14 or They're 0-16 and 3-13, except valuable draft position. All right. So I've finally been dragged over to that side that says if you're going to lose in the NBA, NFL, or in the NBA for that matter too, because the draft has such an impact, if you're going to lose, you might as well lose big. And I'm not saying you tank, and of course the players can't go out there and tank or they're going to lose their jobs or get hurt. But if you have a bad enough team, why not want them to get a primo draft position the next year?
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just, it's to me, and I've said this at the beginning of the year too, and I don't care. The Lions went through this, of course. You know, when you're
how about those Lions, up, Bob France?
How about those Lions, indeed? But just, you know, if your team isn't giving you a legitimate chance to win on a weekly basis, and I'm not talking about winning the majority of the games, but just a chance to win, if you are just resigned to defeat every time you go out, it's just defeating for an entire community. It's very, very defeating. It's very, very deflating, and that's what I'm talking about. But, yeah, real quick, how much has Matthew Stafford, in your mind, sitting in a different city, you're not a Detroit guy, but how much has Matthew Stafford elevated himself in the pantheon of current NFL quarterbacks? He's been pretty much considered by most people to be in the second tier, you know, below the Bradys and Rodgers and Cam Newtons and Roethlisbergers and others who are all having varying degrees of success this year, by the way, due to various circumstances. But then he was down there in that next group. He's threatening to get up there and to be counted among the elite quarterbacks in the league the way he's played.
Absolutely. I'm a huge Matthew Stafford fan. I've liked him since the jump, since he came into the league. I liked him in college. Just because I'm a big arm guy. You know, I love the guys who could just zip the ball all over the field. And he's got, not only does he have a cannon, but he's in climate control conditions, you know, at least 60% of the time, you know, playing in favorable weather and favorable temperatures. So he can zip it all over the place where he wants to, but you know, you're seeing a growth in a quarterback. Sure, it's, what is he, 8 years in now?
Yeah, sounds about right.
And you say, well, I mean, look, he's been good before. This is not just the first year that Matthew Stafford has played well, but you see a guy who's more under control, it seems, who's executing the game plan almost to perfection in stretches of games. Our guy Jim Bob Cooter, I mean, everybody's excited about him. Those two guys, Stafford and Cooter, seem to be on the same page. So, yeah, if I'm a Lions fan, I'm fired up about what I'm seeing. This is good.
How much more does it mean to Dennis, the fact that he's doing this in the first year post-Megatron, post-Calvin Johnson, one of the greatest receivers of his generation, and Stafford has not only not missed a beat, he has taken off?
That's a very great point, Bob, as usual from you. Because those two, Stafford and Megatron, were so linked, for and rightly so, because they made magic happen on hundreds of occasions over the years. But now he's not, the Megatron's not there, and guess what? Stafford's like, all right, we got to go to the next set of of helpers here. Anquan Boldin has been a tremendous addition, at least from afar. That I could see with the Lions.
Oh, yes, he has in a lot of ways. Golden Tate is really stepped up now, kind of, and become, you know, that guy. They're getting great contributions. He's spreading the ball around to a lot of guys, and it's really a great thing to see. They lost three in a row, as you know, early in the season after winning their opener, and a lot of calls, at least here in Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, have been for Jim Caldwell's head. And now, you know, a little bit of steadying of the ship. Suddenly, a win over Philadelphia, then the Rams. Now a red hot Washington team that had won four in a row. You knock them off, and it's a three game winning streak. And now the calls are not for Caldwell's head, but for, hey, you know what? It's time to start looking ahead and seeing what kind of positioning it would take to actually make a playoff spot in the NFC. So it's really a fun thing to see here, even though we're only going into week 8 now, coming up this Sunday. Dennis Mandeloff, great analysis on the football side and on, of course, on the World Series side. Enjoy it. I know you're going to be picking those Cubbies. That's a good thing. Keep it up. Keep being wrong so that we can celebrate a championship in a couple of weeks. All right?
You got it, Bob.
Thank you, Dennis. Dennis Maniloff joining us from Cleveland. We're going to go from Cleveland to Detroit, even though it was a nice transition Dennis gave us, actually, because coming up here after the top of the hour, Chris Lemieux will join us for a more in-depth look at the Lions' win over Washington and the growth and the evolution and the development of Matthew Stafford as a top passer in this league. So we'll get into that coming up at 4:05. At 4:35, we're going to talk about the Buckeyes' unsightly loss to the Penn State Nittany Lions on Saturday night primetime in whiteout conditions, not snow-related, of course, at Happy Valley. Chris Lauterbach of 11warriors.com will join us. And by the way, speaking of the Buckeyes, they can still, of course, make it to the national championship game. All they got to do is win out, win the Big Ten Conference championship game, and they're going to go to the playoffs. You could be there for that championship game, no matter who's there. January 9th in Tampa. We'll give you a trip for two. To Tampa, round-trip airfare, four-night hotel stay, two upper-level tickets to the game, rental car with parking, and a tour of the Yuengling Brewery in Tampa. It's a $5,000 package in our College Football National Championship flyaway contest. If you're the grand prize winner, that will be yours. You could also win a runner-up prize, trip for two to the Michigan-Ohio State game in Columbus, November 26th with limo service. Third place, a prize pack from Yuengling. All you got to do is be the fifth caller to qualify for that great contest right now at 866-240-1065. Caller number five, we will qualify you. If you don't qualify here, you can try that online at 1065theticket.com, 1065theticket.com. This is all, of course, brought to you by our good friends at Yuengling Lager, Yark Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, Country Hearth Fireplaces and Stoves, Allegiant Air at Toledo Express Airport, Total Image Limousine, and Toledo's ESPN 1065 The Ticket. Detroit Lions football talk coming up next with Chris Lemieux, PrideOfDetroit.com, next on The Ticket.
They will try a field goal on 4th and 7. Let's see. That's going to be a 46-yard try for Durbin. Liam McCullough to snap it. Johnston puts it down at the 36, and the kick is blocked. And Penn State's going to scoop it up, and they've got a returner bringing it down the left side of the field. It's Haley, the quarterback, left side to the 10-yard line, to the 5, and into the end zone goes Grant Haley for a Penn State touchdown off a blocked field goal try.
Well, awful loss. We got to regroup. We're going to get back late in the morning again and just got to regroup against a good Northwestern team and go play in our home stadium and rally up and get better. Major issues. We held them to a field goal after a blocked punt, which is inexplainable. And then the long field goal, I thought about it, and that would have put us up by 7, but it didn't work out. So probably should not have kicked the ball then. That was, a 47-yard field goal. He can kick that easily in practice, but they were jumping over us earlier in the game, and I thought we had that fixed.
Well, I still think we can play. Obviously, Cincinnati played well. I don't like losing. Just like anybody else, I can get disappointed and upset. I mean, I can get disappointed. I don't like where we are. I don't like where we are as a football team. This is my responsibility. So at the end of the day, in my mind, I'm trying to find a way to fix it. As fast as I can, the best I can. So that's what I have to do. I take responsibility for it all. It's not our players. We got to fix some things and keep working on some things. We will. This is unfortunate, but I know our guys are trying hard. I mean, it's not from a lack of effort. It's not from a lack of trying. The luck's not swinging our way. We're not getting those breaks right now. I'm trying to find a way to win. I'm trying to find a way to move the ball and score touchdowns. That's our job on offense. So I told you guys before, we'll do whatever we have to do. I'm not opposed to doing anything if it means we got a chance. It's a tough sport, and he's trying to make plays and battling as hard as he can. And these hits, these quarterbacks only have so many of these hits in their body. Pretty soon, guys don't get up all the time, and that's what's happening. It's unfortunate. It's just been happening way too much.
Matthews got it. Back to pass. Looking left. Throwing. It is caught. It's at the 5. Diving into the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Here we go. Lions up by 3 seconds to go. Should be the final play of the game. Cousins back. Throws over the middle. Lateral back to Vernon Davis. Davis looking for somewhere to go. And he's taken down. Put it away, baby. This game is over.
Washington is good. I mean, you don't just win 4 games straight in this league and not be a really good football team. So we anticipated it was going to be a tough, tight game. We take them as they come. We got another one to get focused in on. We don't get too high. Don't get too low. But proud of the way the guys play. They fight. They practice hard and prepare well. That's why they play well in these tough situations.
I wasn't perfect today, no question. Missed some throws, stuff I'd like to have back. We were able to pull it out at the end, which was good. I expect to win every time I get the ball. It's not always going to happen that way. I expect to go out there and win. I believe in the guys that I got in the huddle with me. I think they believe in me, and this is NFL football. This happens. Just glad we made the plays.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed it is, as we roll into hour number two right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. It continues to be a Monday afternoon quarterback edition of... Yes, indeed. Of the Extravaganza. Even though we did have a relatively extended version of, or not version, but discussion of the World Series and a little preview of Game 1 tomorrow night, last half hour with our friend Dennis Mandeloff, we return now back to the gridiron, talking a little Detroit Lions football. Has Matthew Stafford elevated himself into the upper echelon, into the pantheon of greats of current quarterbacks? We all know how that rolls. We've all been watching. For the last several years, it's been about Brady, prior to his injury and decline and subsequent retirement, of course, Manning. And Aaron Rodgers, and Ben Roethlisberger, and Philip Rivers, and maybe Eli Manning, depending on the time. Russell Wilson has threatened to get into that area. Cam Newton got into it with an MVP last year. Those have kind of been the names. Maybe Carson Palmer, who was an MVP candidate last year, too. I'm trying to think of the guys that have just kind of always been accepted as the elite of the elite in terms of the National Football League and quarterbacks. And then in the second tier of that, that's generally speaking where most people rated Matthew Stafford. Has he climbed out of tier two and into tier number one? I got to tell you, I don't think there's any question about it. Looking at overall statistics this year for the 4-3 Lions, the three-game winning streak they're on, and his incredible role in that winning streak, including a game-winning drive, 65 seconds on the clock yesterday. He needed just 49 of those to take the Lions 75 yards to win that game against a very, very solid, I don't know if I'll call them great, but a very good, solid Washington Redskins team that came in on a roll. And joining us now to break it down is Chris Lemieux, who covers the Lions and writes about them and much, much more at prideofdetroit.com with SB Nation. What's going on, Chris? How are you?
I'm doing all right here. It took me a while to get off the energy of that. Before I know we're going to talk a lot of Matt Stafford, but man, this team, man, I... You know me, I try to be as unbiased as I can, but just the energy of this team has been amazing. This is probably, along with the San Diego Chargers, the most exciting forms of football out there right now, the Lions and the Chargers. And that's saying something in the league where we just saw a 6-6 slobber knocker tie in primetime last night between Arizona and Seattle. But the Lions, they put it all together for you on Sunday, man. You want to see fourth quarter... shenanigans, win or lose, it's this team. They will pull something out of their behinds and you'll get your money's worth. I had a lot of people saying cardiac cats, but I mean, man, it's something else. It's been a thrill to watch these games this year, win or lose.
First of all, why are you apologizing for being somewhat biased? You're allowed to be biased. You write for something called prideofdetroit.com. You're supposed to be pro Lions. That's okay.
I guess, but I mean, this is an issue when most of the written Detroit press does take on a bit of a negative tone, and I know I'm saying that kind of in the wake of the death of Drew Sharp, rest in peace, and everything. But a lot of Detroit, like the Free Press, the news, a lot of their columnists very, very acutely go on a very negative tone, and we have always been accused of being a bit of a slappy blog, and I don't think we deserve that at all, because I think we are very fair to the Lions. And yeah, a lot of us do view it as fans because we are fans, but we really strive at Pride of Detroit to keep a level head about everything. But well, I mean, fair. Man, you're getting your money's worth watching these games. You really are. Just no, as a neutral person, you are.
I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You're getting a great, great product from the Lions right now. And for from the league standpoint, Chris, I think it's very good. It's a good thing to have because you're not getting it in a lot of other places. You know, I've been listening to a lot of people make a big deal, and I'm one of them, about the decline in ratings for the National Football League, and a lot of people have theories as to why. But one of the things you cannot just deny is there haven't been a lot of great games. You're not getting a lot of excitement. You're not getting a lot of huge matchups for some reason or another. Games that would be, you know, calendar markers where you've got to make sure that you are in your chair for that game. This is the day that these two teams meet at that time, and I'm ready to go. There aren't a lot of them thanks to a lot of circumstances. You know, New England and Pittsburgh yesterday would have been one of them, two of the NFL elites. But minus Ben Roethlisberger, it's not. Last night, you mentioned Arizona and Seattle should have been one of them. Two of the leading contenders probably in the NFC to go to the Super Bowl for most people going into this season, and they battled to that 6-6 crap fest of a tie. The league is not playing really great, inspiring, competitive football right now, but you're getting excitement every time the Lions are out there.
Yeah, I think this conversation might go a little long if we went too far down this rabbit hole. Maybe I could come back on either some point later in the football season or off season. We could talk about this, but I was talking with some of my friends who follow the English Premier League for soccer, and their ratings are just as down too. Some of them are saying they have some quality of play issues as well, but I think there's a deeper trend here. But again, we're probably going to get way down a rabbit hole if we keep going this way. But
let's do this.
Rest assured.
The reason
sure.
I brought all that up is, and we can summarize it this way, okay? 39-35, 16-15, 34-27, 17-14, 24-23, 31-28, and 20-17. There. In seven games, the Lions have been playing very close games, everything under a touchdown, win or lose, and that makes for some exciting football, something you're getting, as I said, in a lot of games this year.
The only primetime game the Lions have late in the season, the day after Christmas, in Dallas playing the Cowboys, the NFL's got to be licking its chops and hoping the Lions stay kind of this exciting and watch. Because win or lose, that would be a phenomenal game if you get this caliber of Matt Stafford with this probably leaky of a defense playing against a Cowboys team that has a really good offense. It's going to be probably a high-scoring game, probably some late-game heroics from either Dallas or Detroit. I think that could probably be the best Monday night football game of the year if both teams keep on their current trajectory.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. We're talking to Chris Lemieux, PrideOfDetroit.com, breaking down the Lions' win over Washington yesterday, their third straight win. Jim Kushlin is alongside, as always. Kush, go ahead.
Well, I'll go one negative route here, Chris. It happened again in the fourth quarter, though, something we've all been talking about all season long. Now, luckily, Matthew Stafford had his outstanding drive, resulting in the Anquan Boldin touchdown to give the Lions the lead back, but goodness, giving up two touchdown passes in the fourth to Kirk Cousins on, let's see, a 9-play, 75-yard drive, 9-play, 76-yard drive. It happened again in the fourth quarter. This was a 13-3 game early on, and I was flipping around. I got back to him like, oh, good. Lions are a good spot. Oh, but I see it's fourth quarter. Let me keep it here for a little. And sure enough, two Washington touchdowns, and they were trailing. So though the Lions got the win, Chris, it happened again.
Sure. And again, I'm speaking purely from a neutral NFL neutral watching standpoint. As a Lions fan, absolutely, I would love this team to win comfortably because it would stop a lot of my heart palpitations if they did that. But, like, yeah, no, like, this defense is incredibly banged up. Like, I think we were looking at we love the advanced numbers at Pride of Detroit, the DVOA numbers from Football Outsiders. Despite the fact that you're having probably one of the better quarterbacks in the league, probably, we're going to get into it, I'm sure, but, like, I think below like Tom Brady and maybe Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford's right there. And besides an offense that has just been really thrilling, like this defense is incredibly bad. And they might, I don't know what's going to happen with Darius Slay. He left the game injured, possible hamstring injury. Lions incredibly bad about telling the public or the press what the injury reports are going to be or what the status is. So obviously we have no news on Darius Slay. Probably not going to have news on Darius Slay until probably the end of the week. And if the Lions are going on the road to play Houston without their top cornerback, in addition to all the other injuries they sustained on defense and all the other just kind of suboptimal personnel they have on defense, yeah, it's going to be bad. Their defense is going to continue to be bad. And that's like, yeah, that's the Lions' blueprint this year. I really wonder what the Lions could be if they had even a top 20 defense right now.
And I think how much of that do you blame on the defense, the coordinator, the rest of the talent, and how much on the injuries that we've talked about? You know, with Ansa being out, and you're talking about guys who are going to be impact players on any defense, and if they're missing from this defense, you know, on a regular basis or for the vast majority of the season, then, you know, it's going to be hard to overcome that. And a lot of teams have to do that, but this has got to be taken into consideration, right?
Right. And what Bob Quinn, the new general manager, inherited from the old regime was a defense that was very thin. Like, you know, Johnson Badamassi was out there playing snaps. He looks completely lost at linebacker. He just did, I mean, I'm not linebacker, cornerback. When Darius Slay left, they put Johnson Badamassi out there, cornerback. He looked unbelievably lost. And it's a hallmark of this team. It's just, it's not something that's going to get fixed this year. As far as just blame on it, I mean, it's really hard to ignore the injuries. But I think at the same time, too, I think there are some people questioning a little bit of Terrell Austin about coaching up replacements. But there's only so much there's two arguments. A, there's only so much you can do. And then B, the counter argument is these guys play in the NFL. They should be good enough to get coached up for it. I don't know where that actual answer is, but I think, you know, Terrell Austin, we were talking about him as soon as just a couple of years ago possibly being head coaching material. His star is dimming significantly, but the injuries, I think, are just so significant you can't ignore them.
Talking to Chris Lemieux, breaking down the Detroit Lions and the win yesterday over the Washington Redskins. It's win number 3 in a row. I look at this schedule ahead, and, you know, we'll go beyond Houston for just a moment. It's Houston, then Minnesota coming off of their first loss now, of course, really bad loss yesterday to the Philadelphia Eagles. Mike Zimmer not very happy, so that's a team that's going to be looking to be on the rebound. Then the bye. Jacksonville, very winnable game. Minnesota again, which is going to be tough. New Orleans has no defense whatsoever. Matthew Stafford should throw for 674 yards. then the Bears, who are atrocious.
Like Patrick Mahomes numbers against Oklahoma.
There you go. Then the Bears, the Lions to me are a very, very, or not Lions, beg your pardon, the Giants, which will be a week 15 matchup against the Lions at New York. That's a winnable game because I'm not impressed by them on a week-to-week basis. Dallas looks very, very good right now. And then Green Bay to wrap it up. I see a bunch of wins here, and I see absolutely a potential for a 10-win season and a playoff spot. Am I being too overly optimistic given what you and Kush just talked about, and that is the defensive issues, particularly in the second half?
The best I have for that is maybe. This team has baffled me through the first 7 games, and I mean that in the best way possible. Outside of probably the Colts game and the Green Bay game, I have been shocked by every last one of these outcomes. I thought Tennessee was a winnable game. I thought Chicago, winnable game. I thought when they came home at 1-3, Eagles coming in undefeated, I'm like, okay, that's an L right there. Rams coming in, I thought that the defense would give just this off the Lions offense fits all day. Instead, they beat them in a shootout. Washington coming in. Once again, like I saw one Washington commenter, we do a 5 questions exchange with their blogs, Hogs Haven. One of their commenters was saying that, was declaring this game would be Skins 45, Lions 10.
Wow.
But he could also see a 2017 outcome, which is hilarious. But I think he was meaning that that 20 would be for the Skins. But this is kind of the story of the Detroit Lions. You just don't know what you're going to get. It also makes them a very fun team to cover for me. But at the same time, like, we talk about these winnable games, but I could also see a scenario where they split that Vikings series, lose the Jaguars, and then beat, the Cowboys and the Packers at the end of the year. Or maybe drop a game to the Saints, too.
However those wins add up, I mean, they add up. And you're right. It never goes according to the blueprint. But if I'm looking at this right now, and this is just for fun, this is what we do on sports radio and on blog sites, too, so bear with me here. I'm looking at this. They got 2 with Minnesota in a 4-week span. I say they split them. I do. I think they can beat them at home. I see Jacksonville. I see that's a win. So that's 2 wins right there in addition to the 4 they've got. So we're up to 6.
Yeah, we've talked about Jacksonville before. Just very disappointing.
Yes, indeed. Chicago, they already lost to. They're not going to lose to them again. Chicago looks worse by the week, especially with Hoyer at quarterback. Colors, and that's a mess. But that's a win. So that's
Hoyer's gone. Is Hoyer? Oh,
that's
Hoyer
right. Hoyer broke
there?
His arm.
Yeah.
That's right. So they're down to below that. So that lets you know where that is. And I don't even know who they're going to start. But let's just do that. That's hold on. So that's 3 more. So that's 7. I think they'll win in New York against the Giants. That's 8. Now, they need 2 more wins. And you got Dallas, Green Bay, Houston, and New Orleans to get 2 of those. I said Matthew would throw for 674 yards against New Orleans. The problem is Drew Brees might throw for 784 against the Lions. Because they just feast on bad defenses. It's just the way that it is. So I don't know. That's a coin flip. To me, Houston is also a coin flip this week. Green Bay at home, certainly not the same thing as at Lambeau. That could happen. Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers, still nobody knows what's going wrong with Aaron Rodgers, why he's not the same weapon he has always been for his career. And like I said, Dallas at Dallas, I'm just going to pencil that in as a loss. I just counted 10 wins. I just don't know which 2 from that last 4 it's going to come from. It may be that they lose to somebody that they shouldn't, like Jacksonville, and then rise up and beat Dallas, as you say. But I can seriously make this, if I want to, being as objective as possible. You notice I didn't just homer my way to 10 wins there. I'm being totally fair on this. I think they can do that.
Yeah, and I think there's a good chance they might lose to the Giants because it's going to be probably Stafford's first game outdoor in cold weather all year at that point. Like, okay. just look at the schedule. Like, look, I don't think he plays out, like, yeah, he plays in Minnesota in November, but that's really the, and actually Minnesota's technically in a dome now. So, like, at MetLife, near the middle of December, that's going to be the first cold outdoor game, so maybe that hits Stafford a little raw. But besides that, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I could see anything happening in that last 4 or 5 game stretch. Like, it's sky's the limit. I don't know if they hit double digits, but they're going to do their damnedest to try. And it's going to really depend, too, on the bye week and if they can get anyone on the defense healthy. And hopefully they can get Theo Riddick and Eric Ebron healthy, too. But especially on defense, we still don't know the timetable for DeAndre Levy. I know Haloti Ngata, they said 2 to 3 weeks a couple weeks ago, so maybe by the bye you have him back, and, you know, maybe you try to make a move to do something on linebacker if you think you're in it. But, yeah, I just the defense is going to be the wild card here, because the defense being this bad has just basically, and, you know, the defense luck got some good luck on their side this week. You know, they forced 2 turnovers off of Matt Jones, mostly off of Matt Jones. They've had clutch interceptions in the past couple of games against Los Angeles and against Philadelphia. But just in general, it kind of leans on, okay, we can just slow them down a little bit and then pray to God that we get it back to the offense and hope that Matt Stafford can just keep scoring.
Last thing, Chris, and Jim Cush can be a part of this too. Headline from Michael Rothstein, beg pardon, at ESPN.com. Matthew Stafford turning himself into an MVP candidate. So let's bring this full circle. We started the conversation with Matthew. Let's finish it this way. I'm not saying he's going to win the MVP, and I'm not saying he's played himself into that, but would we all agree that he has indeed pushed himself, at least right now? In fact, let me do it this way. Jim and Chris, I'll let you guys kind of do this. If you were to rank the top, let's say, 8 quarterbacks in the National Football League right now today, and you can count a guy who's injured like Roethlisberger based on what he's done in his first 6 games or whatever, but, I mean, this season's NFL, who are your top 8? Where do you slot Matthew Stafford? Chris, you go first.
Well, before we get there, too, I just want to talk about this Bill Barnwell article that came out today. If you really like numbers and seeing Stafford's transformation, just really go check it out. He's really arguing that Stafford should be in this MVP conversation.
And
really
he might
well
be
done.
By the time it's all said and done. It might be.
Yeah,
but,
I think,
you know, obviously we're 7 games in now, so he's, you know, and I think he's part of that conversation. I think it's going to take for a guy who's not a traditional, you know, elite caliber quarterback to get that kind of support from writers who vote for these things. It's going to have to be a lot bigger, and it's going to have to be a lot longer. But for now, for 7 games, he's in that chat. I don't have any problem with saying that.
Sure, and I think he might have some Heisman moments, if you can pardon the shifting of things from pro to college. He might have some Heisman moments. Maybe he leads a late-game revival and win over Dallas or something in prime time, and that kind of seals it for him. But I think that's what it's going to take. I mean, his transformation caught me by surprise. Like, I don't think anyone at the start of the year thought this
was
possible. But
let's put some names into this. Let's get some names into this now. And I'll just throw some at you, and you kind of slot them where you want. Jim, you can just kind of chime in, and we can do this together if you want.
Well, I think I've got my top 5 figured out.
Tom Brady is leading the league in quarterback rating with an astronomical, absurd, can't understand how it can be, even though it's only been in his 3 starts, 132.6 quarterback rating right now. He's got 8 touchdown passes without a pick. Obviously, he's in limited duty right now because of that. He's only been back for 3. Matt Ryan is 113.6 quarterback rating, 16 touchdowns to 4 picks. Matthew Stafford is next, 105.7, 15 and 4, just to give you a couple numbers. Drew Brees, 104.4. Dak Prescott, unbelievably, 103.9. Sounds like radio stations. Phillip Rivers, 102.4. Andy Dalton, 100.7, Sam Bradford, 100.3, and he just got exposed yesterday, committing a bunch of turnovers, 3 of them, I think, after playing so well in the first 5 games for them. Then Roethlisberger, who's out with a knee right now at 99.2. So those are just, and then there's Andrew Luck, too. So those are the top 10 guys in quarterback rating. I don't know if there's anybody below that you would throw into this, but how do you slot Matthew Stafford, not just by rating, but by in terms of who is having the best season? Who are the best quarterbacks in the league right now?
Okay. I would say, you know, you've got to put Tom Brady at the top. It's kind of, he's the old king on the throne, and he's not going to get unseated anytime this season, to be certain. it's 2-3. I can't figure out which it is for Matt Ryan and Matt Stafford. Matt Ryan, and I love the advanced numbers, DYAR, DVOA from Football Outsiders. They don't have the new ones for this week, but he was leading like the entire league above everyone else in DYAR, defense adjusted yards above replacement, which is like, he just has the most total value out of a quarterback out there, but he also plays with Julio Jones. So this is always the weird, bizarre chicken and egg thing we do with receivers, but there's no denying that Matt Ryan, even without Julio Jones, is looking really good right now. Matt Stafford, I mean, there's no single weapon for Matt Stafford to turn to like there's for Julio Jones. So I'm putting him at 3, but like, he's got some decent receivers, but he's also kind of short on his targets right now. But still, like, just watching him make some of these late game turnarounds has just been phenomenal. So, and then after that, I would probably put Phillip Rivers at 4. He is playing out of his mind, and it's a shame that he has just such an awful team around him and that this is going to be the story of Phillip Rivers' career. You know, talk about Detroit wasting talent with Calvin Johnson or Barry Sanders. Let's talk about how San Diego basically wasted the entire career of Phillip Rivers. After that, that's where it gets tricky. I want to put Drew Brees in here. I want to put Dak Prescott somewhere in here. Derek Carr playing phenomenal,
What about Roethlisberger, even though he's out right now? Before he got hurt, he was throwing boatloads of touchdowns the first 5 weeks.
Yeah, although, again, I always look at, like, who do you have as a weapon when I think about these things. And, I mean, that was kind of the unfair criticism about Matt Stafford for so long. It's like, oh, we had Calvin Johnson. And then admittedly, like, you know, as
like
Bill
That's like criticizing Joe Montana because he had Jerry Rice. I mean, you know,
that's true.
They make one another. I don't have any problem with that. In fact, like in Roethlisberger's case, he also didn't have his number 2 guy, Martavis Bryant, all year long because he's a pot smoker.
Sure.
You know, and so one of these knuckleheads like that. So I want to stay with just the QBs and not necessarily who they're throwing to. And Drew Brees, to me, it doesn't matter. Drew Brees reminds me in some ways of Brady. The names change all the time, and through his long career, he has had turnover at the wide receiver position every single year, and it doesn't matter. He makes them all great. Tom Brady has been through so many receivers from Wes Welker to, you know, to Edelman now and Amendola to back when he had Randy Moss for a few years to before. I mean, it doesn't matter the personnel. He makes them all great, and that to me is the real true mark of a of a great quarterback. And Matthew Stafford, I think, is starting to show that a little bit. No Calvin, he's having his best year thus far. And I think that says a lot about him. Christian, what are your thoughts on that?
As I'm looking through this to try to figure out, I'm basing a little bit on what they've done in their careers, plus this year, obviously. And I kind of narrowed it down. So I'm just going to really quick read off who my top 10 for right now are. Brady, Big Ben, Breeze, Rodgers, who would have been 2 had I done this preseason. He's down to 4 because there's been those issues. Rivers, Ryan, then I have Matthew Stafford right now at 7 because I still, for some reason, can't buy into Andy Dalton completely. Then Luck, and then I got Carr at 10. So I got Stafford at 8 at 7 right now.
Yeah, I've got a lot of young guys. I got a lot of guys just, again, going on these advanced numbers from Football Outsiders, which I love and really gets a good impression of, like, who's playing well right now. But, yeah, like, I can buy that, too. I don't know what's going on with Rodgers. I really don't. But yeah,
I really I don't know what's going on with him either. Right now he's 20th in quarterback rating, which is just not possible to be. I mean, really, it's just not. He's got 13 touchdowns and 4 interceptions, which is great. You know, you just elevated Derek Carr there, Cushlin. He's got 13 touchdowns and 3 picks. He's got a 97. He's 6 points higher in quarterback rating than Aaron Rodgers is. For me, I think it's still clearly Brady. And for 2, I'm going to go with Ryan, and then I'm going to go with Drew Brees for the reasons I mentioned earlier. Doesn't matter who the personnel around him is, he just continues to do what he does. 17 touchdowns, and he does it in high volume, too. You expect higher pick totals when you've thrown 273 passes, for example, 32 more than Ryan. Stafford right now through this thus far in the season, 29 more than Ryan, obviously 160 more than Brady because of his suspension. Drew Brees is just sick. 104.4 with a 17-5. Then I'm going Stafford 4. And beyond that, you know, it's you can slot him in a lot of different ways. I don't have any problem with Prescott being there. I'd also like your idea there about Derek Carr. And Andrew Luck, too, is in a tough spot, too. He's carrying that team on his back. despite I'm not being a huge, huge fan of his, I recognize great performances when I see them, and he is turning in one despite a lot of problems on that Colts team. So having said all that, last question, and we got to run because we got to get to the college football here. Guys, can Tom Brady win the MVP in a 12-game season? Is that fair? Can he do that?
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't. And I don't know.
What if he does for those 12 games, what he's doing now through the first three? He's got a QB rating of 132. He hasn't thrown a pick. He's averaging 335 passing yards a game. If he does that for 12, his numbers are going to look like any ordinary mortals for 16 anyway at the age of 39. Cushland, could he do it? Would it be fair to give it to him on a 12-game schedule?
He could do it. You'll get grumblings that it's unfair. To me, it's about what the other quarterbacks especially look like when we get down to weeks 15, 16, 17, you know, in terms of Big Ben and has Rodgers recovered? Because if we're down at that end of the season and Brady is just still jumping off the page, I don't think it matters whether it's 12 or 16 games at that point.
And according to the calculator on my smartphone that I just used, 335 yards a game times 12 is over 4,000 yards passing in a 12-game season. 4,000 yards is a great season in anybody's 16. And again, he's got 8 touchdowns in 3 games. Translate that out. So what's that going to be? About 30 touchdowns, and he's got 0 picks. Again, not that he's going to go pickless the rest of the year, but you see the ratio. If he does that for 12 games, you can just pencil it in. You can start etching it into the trophy. It's going to go to
I don't care much about the trophies at the end of the day, really. It just kind of it washes kind of over me a little bit. I don't know Tom Brady that well. All I do know is that Matt Stafford, like, is a completely unexpected turnaround. I'm still
no doubt about
still
that.
Crossing my head about why. Like, this is a very, like, a lot of people are saying, okay, year 5,
can a guy,
8.
Can a guy like
he's
Stafford,
only 28. He's only 28,
like Stafford,
by the way.
Who's already been a very good player in this league but not, like, an elite one, can he possibly win Most Improved Player of the Year award? You know, if he goes from being,
absolutely,
you know, a really good player to a superstar, and he's on the verge of that, you know, maybe that's something to talk about at the end of the year, but not in week number 7. Let's take that and make that the end. Chris Lemieux, PrideOfDetroit.com. Read him there. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. We got to get a quick timeout here. And as we go into the timeout, how about I hook you up with our final pair of Haunted Hydro tickets? If you want to go to see the Haunted Hydro, go to Experience Haunted Hydro in Fremont. I got a pair of tickets for you if you are the 8th caller to 866. That's caller number 8. To 866-240-1065. We talk college football Buckeye style after their loss. Coming up with Chris Lauterbach of 11warriors.com right here on The Ticket.
Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, 4:48 as we continue. Final segment of the broadcast right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Our conversation with Chris Lemieux talking about Lions football ran a little bit long, so we don't have nearly as much time for our next guest as he deserves, because he's a great interviewer every time we have him on. Chris Lauterbach joining us to talk Buckeye football from 11warriors.com. Hey, Chris, thanks for the time. Sorry about the delay on that. We got a little behind our clock. We appreciate your understanding, though.
No worries. Good to be with you guys.
All right, let's dive right into it. You know, I love the headline. When you click on 11warriors.com right now, the first story is entitled Sky Not Falling. And that is very, very true. First road loss in the Big Ten in Urban Meyer's Buckeye career. It is painful. You hate to see it happen, a team you should have been able to have your way with. But you know what? At the end of it all, it changes nothing. You fall from 2-6 in the standings. If you win out and win the Big Ten championship, all the goals are still in place, and that includes a spot in the playoffs and the national championship.
Yeah, definitely still lots to play for. I think Saturday, you know, when you lose 5 times since Urban's arrival, obviously it gets folks grumbling a little bit. But, yeah, the fact remains, Ohio State's very much still in the thick of it. For me, it was more about how they went about losing the game than, you know, the fact that they actually lost, and I think maybe gives people a more reasonable reason to maybe have concern with, you know, what could happen going forward.
Well, it's the trend, I think, that people are looking at here. If you look at 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks prior to Penn State anyway, the 38-17 lackluster win over Indiana. A lot of people felt like that should have been a lot bigger than what it was. Indiana's been giving them problems. Then it's overtime it takes to get past Wisconsin at Camp Randall. But that's a very good Wisconsin team, but now it's an actual loss against Penn State. So it's 3 weeks in a row that they just haven't looked like the second-best team in the country, which is what they were ranked. And I think that's what has people concerned. The sky isn't falling as of right now, but if the trend continues, there are going to be more losses to come. A top 10 Nebraska team looms. Then, of course, Michigan at the end of the season. So what is it that you see as the problem right now in Columbus with the kind of overall decline in play over the last 3 weeks?
I really think it's two things, two positional groups. But, first and foremost is a wide receiving core. I think some folks have even started to maybe direct a little bit of criticism toward JT Barrett. And I don't know how you can do that when you look at the factors around him at wide receiver and offensive line. I mean, think about wide receivers for a minute. And our guy Kyle Jones has a film study up today that really looked at the receivers against Penn State. And it's really some eye-opening stuff for people that maybe don't see the wide receivers as being the number one problem with this team right now. But, you know, to put that in perspective, I mean, Noah Brown is a solid player. I don't know if he's your number one receiver on a team. You may not have the greatest passing, receiving core of all time, but I think he's solid. But you look at the stats, Paris Campbell is the highest stakes, second most prolific true wide receiver with 9 receptions in 7 games. That's cause for concern. You look at some of the route running from James Clark, Terry McLaurin, lots of drops. In the Penn State game, JT Barrett actually had 28 completions. I think that was a career high. 5 of those receptions went to wide receivers. That's just kind of mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, it really is, and it shows. And well, let me ask you what it shows rather than telling you. Does it show a more conservative offense by Urban Meyer that he's thrown to the backs more than anything else, or is it more that JT doesn't trust himself to go downfield because he doesn't trust that he has those game breakers that he has to go down to the, check down to the backs into the shorter routes?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. I think, it's fine to want to run deep outs and different things like that, but if your offensive line is having the problems it's had, the last couple weeks, and certainly against Penn State, those routes don't oftentimes get a chance to develop. I mean, Barrett was sacked 6 times Saturday, which was the second most sacks Ohio State has surrendered in the Urban Meyer era in Columbus, and they had 11 TFLs, which was the most since Urban has been here. So it's kind of hard for those deep routes to develop if, Isaiah Prince can't stay in front of his man, or Michael Jordan certainly had some struggles this week. So I think that's part of it, is the line not really giving them a lot of time to throw it downfield a lot. I think the other piece is that Ohio State's best weapons are, certainly Curtis Samuel. So you want to get him the ball as much as you can. And if you're going to do it through the air, he's not a true wide receiver. It's going to be more of that slot, short stuff, which you're seeing. So I don't know so much if it's Barrett. I think Barrett obviously doesn't have a great deep ball, but I think the biggest concern is he just doesn't have confidence in his guys to try to throw them open. They struggle to get separation. And I think through maybe this lack of reps with a lot of these guys, he's not willing too far down the field to trust that he can throw them open, maybe partially because of his own concerns with his accuracy, but or ability to complete deep balls. But I think it's just as much not really being confident with these guys that he's got to throw to on the outside.
Chris, last thing before we go, we only have a minute left. Apologies again for the short segment. We got a little bit bogged down there time-wise. But looking ahead to Northwestern, how do they bounce back? It's not something they've had a lot of practice doing, as you pointed out, under Urban Meyer. There aren't many losses, so you don't have a whole lot of comebacks from losses. How do they respond against the Wildcats?
Yeah, I think they'll bounce back. I think it's, this team will be hungry. I think, being a younger team, it doesn't have some of the same issues maybe last year that the team did for, to get up for certain games. The defense is still playing very well. Penn State had 276 yards, went 2 of 13 on third down. So Ohio State still has a defense that they can hang their hat on. And really, if, Ohio State went into that game leading 21-7 in the fourth quarter, give Urban Meyer a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter of 99% of the games that he's going to win. In fact, that's the first time since 2008 that he's led a team into the fourth quarter leading by at least 10 and lost. So I think it's just kind of, getting back to the basics a little bit again, working on some stuff, and they'll be fine on Saturday.
The drop isn't that bad in the AP poll. It's from 2 to 6. In the coaches' poll, however, it's 2 down to 8. Still probably won't matter if they find a way to win out. You beat Nebraska, you climb. You beat Michigan, who's number 2 right now. You really, really climb into that top 4, win the Big Ten championship, and again, it's on into the playoffs. And every goal that they had set for themselves at the start of the year, except for being undefeated, certainly is still within reach. Chris Lauterbach covers the Buckeyes for 11warriors.com, an outstanding website. Check it out for yourself. Follow him. And Chris, thanks for your time. We appreciate it. Thanks again for understanding on our timeliness. We'll get back to you again real soon.
Thank you, guys.
Great conversation with Chris, as always. Another great conversation with Chris Lemieux, talking about the Lions as well. And earlier on with Dennis Vandeloff as we get set for the World Series game number one tomorrow. By the way, Jim Cushlin, where's that game going to be on the radio tomorrow?
That'll be right here on 106.5 The Ticket.
Where else will it be on the radio tomorrow?
Nowhere.
We are the exclusive Toledo home of the World Series. You can't hear it anywhere else but right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket tomorrow night, 8 o'clock first pitch. We're going to break it down in more depth tomorrow, of course, with some Indians and perhaps some Cubbies guests as well. Tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock, we'll talk to you then for the next extravaganza. We'll see you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.